Hi, everybody. I'm Rick Sanchez. This is Direct Impact, and this is part of what we're going to be talking about today.
You won't have to vote anymore, my beautiful Christians. I love you, Christians. I'm a Christian. I love you.
You know, we've said several times on this show that Trump and Vance need to just get out of their own way. But with comments like that, the question is now being raised, can they? Also, there's another story that's developing just right now as we're getting ready to go on the air. This one has to do with what is looking like an attack on a suburb of Beirut. And it does appear at this point like the Israelis are indeed claiming the responsibility for this attack. We're gearing up to bring you the latest on this story as we are going to be joined by guests in Lebanon, in Beirut itself. So we're going to have all of this for you. It's coming together. This is Direct Impact. I'm Rick Sanchez. Let's do it. All right, as we actuate the information out of the reports coming out of Lebanon, I want to start with the domestic politics here. I promise you we're going to be taking you to Lebanon in just a moment, so stand by. Meanwhile, we begin with what may be a case of serendipity, because when we did our show here yesterday, and I think you'll recall, we detailed the double standard in the way that Russia and Israel are treated by Washington. I never thought that on the very day that we did this report, a decades-old interview with Paul Newman, of all people, the famous actor from Hollywood, would suddenly go viral. Here it is.
In 1978 or 79, the Israelis shot down a Libyan civilian aircraft because it had violated Israeli airspace. President Nixon sent a wire to Gaddafi and to Sadat apologizing for this incident. There was no talk about it going into the United Nations. The International Pilots Associations had their meeting. There was 102 nations that voted to condemn Israel, and four that voted not to, and the American representative abstained. Why? Because we couldn't create an enemy there. But when the Soviets shoot down an airliner, the same situation, we rise in moral outrage against this act. What is the difference? Because it's insistent. We must insist that the Soviets have got to be created as an enemy. Otherwise, if they're not really a big enough enemy, how are we going to get appropriations for more arms? Now,
isn't that amazing? It's like somebody was watching our show yesterday and decided to release that video. It caught me by surprise, but now it's being seen by millions of people, and, you know, truer words could hardly have been spoken. Speaking of letting Israel interfere in U.S. foreign and domestic policy whenever it pleases, check out what the State Department official said yesterday when he was asked why the Israeli prime minister is allowed to come to the United States and insult Americans who do nothing more than express a different point of view than him.
The prime minister has the, look, he was invited by Congress. He has the right to come and speak his mind, say what he thinks.
He can say whatever the hell he wants. He is, after all, the president of the United, the prime minister of Israel. Now on to the presidential race. Don't know if you've noticed, but the coverage so far has been ridiculously trivial here in America. Instead of challenging the candidates with serious conversations about international affairs and geopolitics and science and technology or human welfare, the emphasis so far has been on like a soap opera-ish he said, she said kind of stuff, right? I'll give you some examples. The media on the left, CNN, NBC, ABC, they've spent days talking about why J.D. Vance may be a racist because he drinks Mountain Dew. Seriously? And then on the right, they spent an equal amount of coverage debating whether Kamala Harris is too woke because she uses paper straws. Come on, folks. I mean, here we are, in a situation where perhaps because of our actions or our State Department's actions, we're on the brink of World War III in about three different places in the world, the South China Sea, the Middle East, and, of course, Russia. And what is our media talking about? What are they talking about? Straws and Mountain Dews? The drink? And when it comes to objectivity, I want to show you something. Watch this Dear Leader moment over at CNN and MSNBC. First, Van Jones, CNN. Take it, Victor.
If you're a young person watching this, this is leadership. This is patriotism. This is what it means to put the country first and put the party first and put the cause first. When your arm gets tired, you let somebody else finish pitching the game. That's what Joe Biden has done, and he's done that for all of us. And so I just want to say, I don't know who's going to be the VP, the non-VP. I don't know anything about politics. I just know that I love this man. I care about this man. It was painful every day to sit up here and talk about him like he's just a, you know, some problem for the party. Wait till we get to the convention. You're going to see people crying, standing, screaming, cheering. He may not get a chance to talk for 10 minutes. We finally get a chance to put our arm around this guy.
This is a guy crying over Joe Biden. That's the same guy, by the way, who calls Trump supporters a cult. Trump supporters a cult. He's crying on the air describing his adherence to Joe Biden. But at least he can say he's an analyst and he doesn't have to be objective. At least they don't pay him to be objective. He obviously isn't. Here's Rachel Maddow, who fancies herself as an objective journalist, with her version of the same thing over on NBC.
What a man. What a patriot. What an act of selfless devotion to your country. And he has been a phenomenal president. He brought us back from COVID. Gave us the best recovery from COVID of any major nation on earth at a time when the world has economically been struggling in the wake of COVID. The Biden economy is literally the envy of the world. He ended the presidency of Donald Trump at one disastrous term. And he did it while being decent.
Wouldn't you just ask? What the hell happened to objectivity or credibility? I mean, she's going on and on. What a man. What a phenomenal person. What a great president. I'm sure the 700,000 dead Iraqis somewhere up in heaven are wondering what the hell she's talking about. Or maybe the 180,000 Palestinians who've died because, in large measure, him. Or maybe the Ukrainians whose lives are now in peril in large measure because he's done everything possible to push this war through and through. Oh, my God. And now let's talk about the other side, because my job here is to analyze both sides of this situation. So I try to do the best thing, the best that I can. The Trump campaign these days seems to be making some serious mistakes as well when it comes to messaging. This campaign, if you look at the polls, is really theirs to lose, right? They've been up by 7 points in the last couple of weeks. And here's what I see. Harris is being managed very carefully. Her handlers are now prepping every word that comes out of her mouth. Every move that she makes is choreographed with the music and the steps and everything else. And to be fair, she's playing that part pretty well so far. I'm even kind of surprised. Trump, on the other hand, is not disciplined. I know that's part of his shtick. I get it. And, that's why some people like him. But he's showing up at rallies, and he's just letting it rip. And while that works for his base, the people who love him love that. He needs now to start going beyond the base to the general, as they call it, the general audience, especially for moderate voters. He needs to lock those folks in if he wants to win. I mean, not my place to give advice to anybody, but I'm just looking at this and saying, what? What he needs to do is explain how he will make America great again. It's not about attacking women, being overly negative, or saying really crazy things like he did last night. Listen to this.
Christians, get out and vote just this time. You won't have to do it anymore. 4 more years, you know what? It'll be fixed. It'll be fine. You won't have to vote anymore, my beautiful Christians. I love you, Christians. I'm a Christian. I love you. Get out. You got to get out and vote. In 4 years, you don't have to vote again. We'll have it fixed so good you're not going to have to vote.
I think I know what he's saying. And I want to be fair to him. I think what he's trying to say is you won't have the urgent need to vote because America will be a better place. And I think that's what he's trying to say. I also think he was trying to say that he is a Christian when he actually sounds like he said, I'm not a Christian. The rest of it about calling them his Christians, it was a strange moment. I don't think it helps him. Manila, let me bring you in. Your thoughts.
Well, I'm glad, Rick, that you had a Trump translator app. Perhaps I need to download that, because I couldn't process the message that he was sending there. And I think that is exactly the problem right now that we're witnessing for the Trump campaign. As you said, he not only had momentum going into the new year of 2024, but then surviving this assassination attempt, picking J.D. Vance, he had the wind beneath his wings. The wind is in his sails. It is his game to lose. And suddenly this messaging is completely convoluted in the 11th hour, in the final stretch of this race. I mean, we're now about 3 months out from the elections, and he really seems to have lost the messaging that he had a year prior. And as you mentioned, going completely negative, having J.D. Vance attacking women and so forth, that's going to turn off a lot of voters somewhere in the middle. I'm not sure who's managing the messaging at this point, but it really needs to get whittled down and tightened up in this final stretch, Rick.
Yeah, it's early enough, and who knows where this is going to go. But I think at this point, it really calls for a certain degree of discipline and adherence to messaging. And the message can't be everything all the time. It needs to be one or two things, not just everything that comes out of your mind at any given point. And I think to your point, that's what they're not doing at this point. And I agree with you on the women thing. Look, it's hard and creepy for me as a man to try and put myself in women's shoes. But when I talk to my wife and my daughter and others, what I hear from them is they're not comfortable with some of the language that they've been hearing recently from Republicans, right?
And by the way, Rick, women's shoes are not really that comfortable. They're kind of tight and they squeak and squeeze you. But absolutely, I think they need to bring female surrogates out at this point. And I'm not sure who that might be. And perhaps you and I have discussed this. Maybe Usha Vance is the one to put out on the campaign trail to kind of clean up her husband's image after such nasty remarks he made about the so-called crazy cat ladies.
Yeah, she's impressive. Yeah, going after people simply because they don't have children or maybe can't have children, that's not a nice thing to do. You're absolutely right. Manila, I'm going to let you go early because apparently we've got some breaking news coming out of Lebanon.
Yeah.
Thanks there, partner. We appreciate it. So let me fill you in on what we're hearing right now. As I'm reading over here, as I look over, I see that Israel has now apparently accepted responsibility, claim responsibility for an attack on a suburb of Beirut. This is obviously extremely significant. Ever since we were covering the Netanyahu visit to the United States, we've been mentioning that he will likely use this speech in front of Congress and the support that he seems to be getting from the American politicians to then escalate the war. And we've seen things in Yemen. Now we're seeing this particular story, as expected, happening right now. I think we've got some video that's going to be coming in from Lebanon. We've got Dr. Nabil Khoury, who's going to be joining us. We've got former Pentagon official Michael Maloof, who's very familiar with Lebanon. Both of those are going to be joining us in just a minute. Stay right there. We're going to be right back. All right, let me set the scene for you. The reports that are now being confirmed by both wire services, we're also looking here at the New York Times confirming that Israel has indeed struck a suburb in Lebanon. The claim by Israel is it's in the vicinity of Hezbollah's Shura Council, the group's apparently central decision-making authority. That report also now being confirmed by Lebanon's state-run news agencies. Crowds of protesters have poured onto the street. I think we've got some video we can share, at least some of the preliminary videos that are coming in right now. And we'll see the scene of the actual attack. There it is. That is from one of the suburbs not far from or actually where the attack took place. Joining me now is Dr. Nabil Khoury. Dr. Khoury is joining us from Beirut. He's a senior fellow at the Arab Center in Washington. Also joining us is former Pentagon official Michael Maloof, who's a senior policy analyst at the Pentagon. Michael, by the way, has ties to Beirut as well and is very familiar with that area. Dr. Nabil, since you are there in Lebanon, please set the scene for us. Tell us what the situation is, what the latest is that you have heard on this ongoing back and forth on this attack by Israel?
Well, the strike took place roughly an hour, or a little over an hour ago. There's chaos in the streets, obviously, where the hit took place. So the information is still coming in on casualties. But what we know is that seeking one of the leaders of Hezbollah in the southern suburb of Beirut, they hit an apartment building. and collapsed a building of four or five stories high. So you can bet that there will be a lot of civilian casualties. Right now, the ambulances are working and people are working to sift through the rubble. Hezbollah has, however, already confirmed that the person that the Israelis sought was not in the building. So the Israelis did not get the man that they were after.
Well, it's amazing. It's amazing to think, Dr. Corey, that once again we're in a situation like we've seen so many times in Gaza, where civilians end up being targeted or die, and then we hear the other side, in this case Israel, say, well, it's because we heard that there was a terrorist in a tunnel somewhere. In the case of Gaza, of course, it would be referring to Hamas. In this case, it would be referring to Hezbollah. And then we find out there was no Hamas or there was no Hezbollah. That's troubling, isn't it?
Well, I mean, the real bad story is in Gaza, of course.
Of course.
Where they've leveled much of the Gaza Strip. And Hamas is still there and is still fighting them. But you have over 40,000 civilian casualties so far. Israel doesn't seem to learn from history or doesn't want to learn that these, what they refer to as security operations, don't end any wars for them. They continue to be at war in the region. And each year they lose more and more because now they're fighting militias, not standing armies of Arab states.
Well, what do you think? Well, let me stop you right there, and I'm going to talk to, I'm going to bring Maalouf into this conversation as well. What do you think of the argument that we've heard, even from some American politicians, that what you just said is true? They keep doing this, and it's not going to end the war. Maybe it's because, as many say, Benjamin Netanyahu personally doesn't want this war to end. He needs the war to continue. In fact, he wants to escalate the war, and that's what this process or this attack that we're that you're describing to us right now is really all about. Michael, I'll let you in on this, and then I want to hear what Dr. Corey has to say about that as well.
Sure. Well, thanks for having me. Yeah, I consider what Netanyahu did by coming to Congress. He basically laid out the game plan, and the Congress cheered. Namely, the game plan ultimately is to go get Iran. But Lebanon was not mentioned in that speech. However, we're hearing from Gallant and his other crazy ministers, Ben-Gvir and Smotrich, that they want to go into Lebanon. They want to go up to the Litani River, up to and in southern Lebanon. They want to also basically take back all of their Masonic holdings, as they claim, you know, from biblical times. And you know, it's a total disregard of people who live in those areas. Yeah, Hezbollah responded as part of the resistance to the attack of on the Palestinians and the killing, as Dr. Corey points out, to some 40,000 people now, innocent people who have died through this carpet bombing that Israel does incessantly, and the United States does nothing to stop it.
But there,
now the United States is condoning what's happening in Lebanon, even though they say they don't want it to spread.
To be fair, I'm reading right now over my shoulder, and what I'm seeing is direct claims from the United States, State Department, and others saying the U.S. forbids and is telling Israel to back off and not attack Lebanon. Meanwhile, Israel is saying they had to attack Lebanon because of the Hezbollah attack on the Golan.
That's problematic. That's an issue.
What do you mean that's an issue?
Because Hezbollah normally will admit to an attack and also to their mistakes. They're now claiming very, very vehemently they had nothing to do with that attack on the Golan. Those are Arabs. They are Druze.
And they're
part of the resistance.
Make sense of this, Dr. Corey, for us, if you would.
Well, there's a contradiction in the Biden administration's position on this. they claimed that they told the Israelis that Beirut was a red line, not to hit Beirut, and that they did not want a full-scale war. Mm. At the same time, they told Benjamin Netanyahu that if diplomatic solution doesn't work and they do end up in a war with Hezbollah, that the U.S. would be right behind him, supporting him, which means the subliminal message is very clear to him. Go ahead and do what you like, and we'll still support you. The thing about Beirut also, the Lebanese foreign minister spoke only 2 hours ago, 3 hours ago, barely an hour before the strike. And he said that he was told, and I presume here by American sources, because that's what he's close to, that there would be a limited Israeli strike. And the strike took place in Beirut, which means that the Americans were already told in advance about it. So they are speaking on from both sides of their mouth. They say that they are restraining the Israelis, but in reality, they're not. This strike right in the heart of Beirut will surely cause not just anger in the streets, but Hezbollah will at some point of their own choosing retaliate. And they'll probably retaliate against one of the cities that the Israelis think that are well protected. This tit for tat is dangerous. And I think the Biden administration has done a very poor job in trying to keep this war from spreading.
Yeah,
I think the danger of it becoming an all-out war is quite serious.
Well, but politically, I can just tell you, as an American and as a journalist who covers the politics in the United States, this is the absolute worst thing that can happen to the Harris-Biden administration or the Harris campaign, because just as she's getting even with Trump in terms of what the polls are saying, this situation escalates and it'll make her look like it's something that the Biden administration is not able to handle once again from a geopolitical standpoint. But here's what I want to know from you, Michael. How big a deal is this? You know, a lot of us all over the world and here in the United States, we keep seeing these tit-for-tats, these skirmishes in the Middle East, and we always wonder whether, yeah, it's just another day, another situation in the Middle East where someone has attacked somebody else. But it seems to me like this is bigger. Like this could be escalatory. We're down to about 2.5 minutes, but first you, Michael, and then I want to have the same question from you, Dr. Corey. Michael, you go first.
Yeah, the area of Dahiyo, and I used to have an apartment there in my post-DOD days, and the area that was hit is not far from where my apartment was. It's near the what we would call the Fadlallah Mosque, and that area is the heart of Hezbollah today. And you have people, the hierarchy of Hezbollah that are there, but these are also people that have stores. These are communities. It's densely populated, and the apartment. And I've actually seen the pictures now of the apartment building that was taken out. It collapsed some 5 or 6 floors, and there probably were people in those buildings, not to mention that it spilled over into the street. I'm also told there's an unconfirmed report that there was a second target, and that was at the Bauman Hospital, which isn't very far from that area.
Let me get back, Michael, to my question real quick, because I want to give Dr. Corey, joining us there from the scene, the last minute of our show on this, and it's the question of whether this will indeed be escalatory, or we'll be looking at this 3 weeks from now and saying, okay, it was just another attack, like so many before it. Dr. Corey.
Yes, this is definitely escalatory, but Hezbollah is very disciplined. They're not interested in going into an all-out war at this time. Hmm. And so they will take their time. I don't think they'll respond right away. Hmm. But at some point, they will show the Israelis that they can hurt them as well. Hitting civilian targets in Beirut, which is exactly what this was, shows that Netanyahu and the extreme right in his government really don't care who they hurt. And in fact, they look for places where it hurts the population, thinking that the population would then turn against Hezbollah.
Wow.
This is not happening in Lebanon.
Interesting.
People are very upset with this, and I think the Israelis will feel that anger at some point in the not-too-distant future.
Gentlemen, we have unfortunately run out of time. Michael Maloof, great insight. Obviously, this is something that's very close to you. Dr. Nabil Khoury there in the place where this attack taking place. My thanks to both of you for your wisdom and your insight on this story as we cover it. Again, we just learned about this just before we were getting ready to go on the air. That's our show. Remember what we always like to say, always look out your own outside of your own box. Truths don't live in boxes. I'm Rick Sanchez, and we'll be looking for you next time.